friends. Welcome back to the Dizzy Breakdown. I'm Maya.
And I'm Caro. And we're two American friends on opposite coasts who love to break down
and break down over
Turkish TV shows. So, Maya, it is episode 4.
It is episode 4. Because we did that re-recording for our second episode, I feel like we've done more episodes.
I know. I forget that that happened. For those of you that didn't listen to episode 2, which was our Ashkmantic Intikim episode, we recorded that episode. And then the show took such a turn when they fast-forwarded 5 years that we decided we didn't want to put out an episode that was wholly unrelated to what we talked about. So we re-recorded it.
Yeah, we'd had predictions and so much hope, and then the show was like, actually, we're doing none of that.
Oh, yeah. I laugh when I was like, Ozan's gonna follow her to London.
Yeah, so it was for the better, but I think I am now forever stuck having the wrong episode count in my head. Guess there are bigger problems to have.
There are, like us having to re-record this episode, but hopefully
Shush.
We won't have to do that.
We're not doing that.
Sus. I've started saying that. Do you ever use Turkish words in your real life?
I want to. I think the biggest one is Kim, just who.
Oh.
But there are some words where if I'm just thinking my thoughts and I come across a word, for some reason my brain will try to think of the Turkish word to see if I know it.
That's funny. When I first started watching Dizzy's, when I was watching Senchal Kapemi, I would often say Allah, Allah when I was stressed out. And I would do it just to myself, knowing that it was something from this odd little foreign TV show that I had started watching. But now in my head, I do think a little bit more in terms of Turkish words. I do say sus to myself a lot. And I say sakino. Sakino. Calm down. I know.
That's so funny.
Interesting what you pick up when you binge watch a lot of Turkish television.
And I will say, at least for me, because I am trying to actively learn more on my own as well.
Are you doing Duolingo?
Duolingo every day.
Good for you.
I just hit 1,100 days in a row.
Wow, Maya.
Which is either cool or concerning. Haven't decided yet.
That's impressive. I prefer to learn the old-fashioned way, watching TV.
I think that the unofficial subtitles actually help me learn more because I know a lot of common words at this point. And so I'll see the subtitle and I'll hear the words and I'll see where they don't match up.
Oh, yeah.
So even if I don't understand all of the spoken, I'll know that the subtitle is wrong, which is helping me learn a lot in
Good.
An odd way.
Do you ever wonder, this is a total aside, but do you know how in every show when they're eating, they say afitos?
Mm-hmm. Afiyet olsun.
Does that actually mean, do they say bon appetit that often?
Well, it's...
I don't say bon appetit that
no,
often.
No, I think part of it is that there isn't a direct English translation. Because it's also, they say el in the salik, like health to your hands.
Yes.
So
took me a while to understand what they were talking about, but figured it out.
I think part of the reason they use the French translation is that English speakers will get the gist of that way more because we don't really have a cultural specific words around meals and communal eating, I guess, that way. So
no, that's a good point.
But Caro, I do want to talk about, you have been finishing shows lately.
I know.
And I am quite proud. I don't know if that's
Thank
the right
you.
Word.
No,
it's been
it.
Cool.
I'll
You've been
it.
Checking off these shows.
If our listeners know anything yet, it's that I like to poke fun at how harsh you are towards me. So I will take any compliment.
Oh, God.
That you.
Okay, then for the listeners also, please know I very much like Caro. Okay, so.
I know. If we weren't such good friends, I wouldn't joke so much about it. So December was super busy for me and January was relatively busy, but it did die down a little bit and I've been able to watch some shows. Also, I'm getting a puppy in a little less than 2 weeks, so I'm trying really hard to finish as much as I possibly can before I'm just constantly attacked by this wild animal that I'm bringing into my house.
What's been so funny is we wanted to record before the puppy,
yeah.
Making plans around the puppy.
I know.
It sounds like this monster is about to invade.
There is a monster about to invade.
You've chosen this.
I know. So I'm trying to finish as much of my shows as possible. I finished two shows in the past month. One was Kuzgun. It took way too long for me to watch that, and I enjoyed it so much. We talked about this in a previous episode where I was watching the show on my TV in my living room, and I think the problem was is I was so distracted. Like, I would play games on my phone, I'd get a text message, and I would not be watching and reading the subtitles. And as you've pointed out, Maya, with Kuzgun, you really need to pay attention to the show and what's going on. So I was like, I don't know, I'm not getting into this. And then I
started
watching it.
Why don't I know what's going on?
Yeah, like, why do I have no idea? Who are these people? But then I started watching it on my iPad in bed, and I became very quickly addicted. So it was just my own personal watching issues that I needed to get a hold of. But I loved it. It was so good. It's not a top show for me. It will never replace Kyrillic Ash. I don't think a drama could because I love rom-com so much. But I very much enjoyed the Dila and Kuzgun storyline. I lived for that.
I'm going to take this as a win for team drama. You can have your rom-coms, but I'm claiming this as a win.
Thank you. Thank you. And then I also finished Kara Sevda.
The Odyssey.
Which is a feat. It is 74 episodes.
This has been the odyssey of Kara watching Kara Sevda.
It has. Because I would binge a few episodes and get super into it. And then I wouldn't watch it for like a month. And you'd be like, wait, you're still only on that episode? And I would be like, yes, because it requires watching it to move forward.
What a concept.
I mean, what a show, though. Honestly, I can see why people love it. Because I fell in love with it. I really, truly think it is one of the greatest shows of all time. Because what I appreciate now is how hard it is for writers to keep up that level of plot and intrigue and moving the story forward without falling into the trap of drawing the storyline out and really not finishing it. Kara Sevda did such a great job of taking all these threads and then tying them together. And like sometimes the bad guy won and sometimes the good guys won. And you never knew who had the upper hand. You think something bad's going to happen. And then boom, you realize the good guys actually knew what was happening and they planned for it. Oh, it was a ride. I absolutely loved it. I will say, I said in the first episode that A Turkish Dizzy has not yet made me cry. I haven't reached that level. I ugly sobbed. I couldn't stop. Like, it is so heart-wrenching. I'm not going to give spoilers away, but wow, it really affected me for like a solid half an hour.
Well,
you should watch it, Maya.
I'm going to. I will. And I've watched 12 episodes. It's just...
You need more. It takes 20 to get really addicted to it.
No, I did really like it. And I was really intrigued by it. But as we've said before, you and I are very different about how we approach shows where you'll have a bunch going at one time that you can jump between.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like doing that. I like finishing shows one at a time, which makes a show like Kara Sevda hard for me to want to dive into because I feel like I can't really watch anything else until I finish 74 episodes.
That's a shame because it's a long show.
That's my own deal. And I will get over it eventually. And I will watch it because it's a staple Dizzy.
I think you'd really like it. Knowing you as much as I do, I really think you would become very into it. And I'm the first to admit, it takes time to get into.
I did really like what I saw.
And there's Khan, the greatest villain of all time.
That's another thing. I think now I would be okay watching it simultaneously with Yarga, but...
It's the best.
It's just so odd because I don't want to see him as a bad guy. I don't want to see Ilgaz as evil.
Don't think of it that way, though. Think of it as, like, you're seeing the range of his acting.
It'll happen. I'm not going to tell you when, but it will happen. I promise.
I mean, there was a period of time in late September where I was watching Ash 101, Yarga, and Kara Sevda at the same time.
I don't know if that's a brag or not.
I was on Khan overload and I was like, he's just such a chameleon. I don't know how he does it. And you're like, he's acting.
Hashtag acting.
Hashtag acting. And then last but not least, I have restarted, much to your dismay, Ashmantic Intikam. I was just watching it now before we started this podcast. I have fallen head over heels in it all over again.
It's not my dismay, more like I'm happy that it can still bring you some joy. It's
Here's
just...
the thing. It is better as a binge. This show is meant to be binged. It is not meant to be watched week to week. It's not meant to be thought critically of. I don't want to deep dive into the plot. But absolutely, I love it as a binge. I'm on episode, what are they at, 30? I'm at 28 right now. I've been watching it religiously for the past few days when I can, and I love it.
I am happy for you. And that's...
Are you ever going to watch it ever again?
Well, if we have to do a podcast wrap up, then I feel like I have to, which is part of my dismay that you're getting into it, which means I might not be far behind.
I will say the little kid is so cute. Atlas is so cute. Oh my God. They picked the perfect little boy for that.
Which is so funny seeing as when he was introduced, you were so mad. You're like, this kid is not cute enough to make up for what they've been doing.
I said, he's not enough. I still disagree with the direction they took on the show. Like, I'm now getting to the point where they're starting to resolve this mess. And I'm like, God, it didn't have to happen this way. But I'm enjoying the drama. And it's enjoyable to, like, skip over and fast forward the stuff I don't care about and to really focus. Also, knowing what I know about what's going to happen, I'm enjoying it a lot. So if anyone is out there listening, because Maya won't talk to me about Ashmantic Intikam, please feel free to talk to me and be my friend, because I need you people.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's outsource your AMI friendship needs.
Thank you. All right, Maya, what are you watching? Because I'm looking to start a new one. So tell me about what you're watching. Maybe you can persuade me.
Well, I think you're going to be disappointed. I don't know if I have anything for you. Honestly, I've been so busy not in Disneyland, so I have really not been watching a lot. But I said I was going to start a new show, and I did.
Oh.
I started Bobble.
You don't tell me anything. What is Bobble about?
I chose this partially because I didn't know a ton about it. I think I've said before that I just wanted to watch something that was a good binge that I didn't know anything about,
mm-hmm.
that I didn't know spoilers about. Because if it was good, I wanted to be surprised. And if it was bad, why would I even watch it?
Fair. And you wanted one that was finished. Is this finished?
Yes.
Because I don't think I've heard of it.
It's 2 10-episode seasons, which makes me think that it was written more intentionally.
Oh, okay.
But the second season did finish in late 2020. So I'm curious to see how COVID affected the storyline at all.
Oh, yeah.
I've only watched 5 episodes, and it's actually been a while since I've been able to dive back into it. But the other reason I watched it was because my girl Birje Akale from Siyabaya's Ash is one of the leads.
Oh, Birje.
So, yeah, I started that. And it's interesting. It's another drama.
Shocker.
I don't want to be predictable, but in this case.
You like what you like. Don't apologize for it. Because I certainly don't apologize for my rom-com trash.
Sometimes I wish you would. I'm just kidding.
I will never.
But yeah, it's another drama. I don't know how to describe it quickly, but there's this economics professor who is caught up in some sort of less than legal money movement, let's say, or he's falsely accused. It's a little unsure. And he loses his teaching job at the university. But at the same time, he finds out that his 8-ish-year-old son has this brain tumor that needs an operation. And so he and his wife are really desperate and he tries everything he can, but he turns to an old friend, and this friend leads him to I guess you'd call him a mafia type person as like a loan shark, and him and his friend slowly fall deeper and deeper into debt, and they try to kind of swindle this big boss. And then Birje is the mistress of this boss, and she has her own reasons for being there, and all of the characters have interconnected pasts that only some know about. And it's intriguing and it's nice. I mean, it's definitely a drama, but it doesn't feel as shock value-y in the writing. So
you like it? You'd recommend it?
I think. I haven't gone far enough into it yet. I would so far.
Okay.
I don't know if it should be top of your list. I think there's other things you would enjoy more, but...
Is it a trashy rom-com? Then probably
not.
No, I'm just kidding. You know me. I like a lot of the recommendations you give me. I think Alev Alev is a great one where I thoroughly enjoyed that, even though it's not my typical drama. And I still feel like that show deserves more props than it gets. So props to you for suggesting it.
I think part of it is because I still don't know what I think about it. I don't know how to recommend it, but it is good.
How many episodes are you in?
I'm only 5 in out of 20 total.
Isn't it wild? Given how long these episodes are, no matter how good a show is, it takes time.
That's really all I've been watching besides my regular weekly shows. We, together, separately, have been watching Yarga, of course.
We have. It's definitely still my number one. I think it's probably still your number one.
It is. I do want to say something before we dive into thoughts on that. For any listeners who really want us to do a Yarga episode, I need you guys to know we really want to do one too, but partially because of how recording the Ashkmantic Intikam episode went, where we had a show that was still running, and partially because we just want to do it justice,
mm-hmm.
we're holding off on doing that on purpose, at least until season 1 is over.
Yeah.
Just so we have a nice bookend where we can dive in, talk about everything we want to talk about, and not mm-hmm. risk the story story changing so drastically that it doesn't make sense anymore.
Because it does happen. In the last episode that aired as of this recording, they revealed who actually shot Engen. And I had no idea they were going to reveal it so soon. So it's just an example of it moves too quickly for us, given the realities of recording and Maya's editing. It takes time and there's no way we could do it justice. So we definitely want to do one. We have so many thoughts about Yharga. We want to do it. We want to do it right. And we're going to wait until there's enough of a hiatus for us to do that.
It is coming. But yeah, now we're in relationship era.
Yeah, they're in the thick of it.
Which is just so good because the whole show, they've had this unspoken intimacy, emotional and then physical with their hugs and all of that. After the kiss, it just felt like a bonus for them. It didn't feel like this huge leap in change in a relationship, which is something I sometimes have a hard time with in rom-coms, where the characters will kiss and then there'll be a couple episodes of them kind of awkward with each other. They don't know how to be, they don't know what to do in that relationship. And Jaylen and Ilgaz already have such a strong relationship that adding this romantic element overtly just makes it so much stronger without feeling totally new.
Also, what I love about this show so much is that there's so much going on. My hope, and again, in Sema we trust, you don't need to give Jaylen and Ilgaz that typical rom-com-y tropey, oh, they're together, but now we have to break them up, because there's so much going on. They're going to have drama in their relationship just by the nature of what's going on. Jaylen's father still has to be revealed that he's very likely no longer with us anymore. I know, but I do kind of like that they're slowly pulling that thread. I don't love when it's going to be actually revealed. I'm not looking forward to that bomb, but I appreciate that it's just kind of floating on the surface there. I also kind of want to know what happened. Aren't you kind of curious? I'm curious. Where'd he go? Who took him?
You're totally right. That is a very odd unknown at this point.
And we forget about it.
We forget about it. But it's so weird that all the characters who were mostly involved with his disappearance don't know what happened to him. All we know is that someone or something opened the trunk of Metin's car and the body was taken out. We don't know if a person took it, and if a person did take it, it's not one of the people we think it would be.
Right.
If he did it himself, the security cameras would catch someone staggering out of the hospital parking lot.
And now I don't know what to believe, because I've lost a little bit of the belief that all the main players have been established because of the lab tech.
We need to talk about this guy, because in Sema we trust, it's her show. I love what she's done with the place, but kind of disappointed that it was the lab tech. It feels like a last minute add-on, and I don't want it to be.
I know. When you were watching the last episode, though, and it started, did you have a minute where you were like, am I watching? Is this the end? Like, they started out showing the murder, and I didn't think we were there yet.
Well,
in Sema We Trust, I had a moment where I was like, I'm on the wrong episode.
Well, part of me isn't sure, because Sema has known the ending of the show / season one since the show is going on. She knows where it's going to end, and it sounds pretty likely that we'll get a second season. So I'm just curious to know now, because the show is so popular, if they're trying to extend the first season. It'll definitely get where she wants it to go, but I wonder if they're adding more things, or if this really is the new wave of plot.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. Part of me would like to think that this has been her plan all along. Obviously, there's someone pulling the strings of the lab tech, so there is not the actual killer, but the perpetrator who prompted that killing. It's got to be Yekta, though, right? Like, it has to be Yekta.
I mean, at this point, it is who it is. I feel like it doesn't serve me to get behind a candidate, because I have no concept of who it'll actually be.
It serves me. Sema, if you're listening, DM me. Let's chat.
Sema, don't. It's fine. You do you.
Sema, we love you.
But yeah, so I'm really curious. I mean, you say that you didn't think we would know who the murderer is yet, but I don't know what else we would be doing, because we've done the Inji arc of finding out what happened and trying to get justice for her, which overlaps with the Engen arc, which took off. And now that this Engen arc is coming to a close, he's dead and gone and buried. We don't have any residual plot left to be a third arc, unless it's more focused on Ilgaz and Jaylen's careers, which doesn't feel like a plot to me. That's just...
Well, it feels like they could have almost like a case of the week, and then in the background, that's how I thought they were going to play it.
Which I'm not psyched about, to be honest.
I'm not neither here nor there on it. What I don't like is I've never been frustrated by Yarga before, and now I'm frustrated with where they're going in terms of framing Ilgaz, because it just seems a little bit of a stretch.
Well, I think it's not framing him for the murder so much as him diluting the case to get Jaylen out of jail. I think it's more introducing the idea to Yekta and to the court that he's created this third person out of nowhere and planted the glove. I don't think they think Ilgaz killed him. Can we talk about the fact, though, that this lab tech who works at the police station was able to get into the courthouse at night and was, I guess, not picked up on cameras and was able to get into Ilgaz's old office,
which was not locked.
But also, I know it was for cinematic effect that Ilgaz sees them taking down his nameplate next to his office. But if they're gonna speed through scrubbing him from the courthouse, why would they leave his desk and all of that untouched? Like, it just seems like so much of a stretch to get Ilgaz's DNA that way.
Yeah, I think in terms of what Dizzy's take liberties with, this is not a big one for me. But I agree. No, that's a good point.
It's just that Ilgaz is kind of a pillar in the show of what's good and right. And yes, that's been a bit toxic to him in his life mentally. He's still the one we can always count on. Mm-hmm. And so having the show try to pull him down feels uncomfortable for me as a viewer, which is why I'm also really conflicted about him being a lawyer now and Jaylen not being a lawyer now. And I get it is for other plot reasons, but something I like so much about their dynamic was their relationship through work and how good they are in their careers. So now that they've both, I guess, jumped down a rung on the ladder, It's, I don't know, I'm so torn because Parse mentioned to Ilgaz, we can get you back your job.
Yeah.
And Ilgaz didn't 100% say no, because that would have been an opportunity for Sema to close that door for us. Mm-hmm. I do like that Ilgaz is saying, I feel like I'm making my own decisions for once. I think that's important for him because he has lived under the weight of his father's expectations and the expectations he's built for himself for so long. But I don't think he should stay a lawyer.
I think that scene with Pars is important. I kind of thought of it as it was happening and I was like, this is here for a reason. They didn't need to add that. He could have just said, thank you, have a good night. Not the same without you. So in my opinion, I think that part's important. My personal opinion is I think he's going to go back to being a Sabji.
Yes.
But I think he's going to be a different Sabji. Like, I think he's going to learn through this time how to be a little more gray and that not every case is black and white. I'm enjoying the dynamic with him and Jaylen, but I just don't see him staying that way.
I hope so.
I think it's all going to work out. I think Jaylen's going to become a lawyer again. He's going to, I don't know how it'll happen, but I'm looking forward to the ride to see how we get there. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, I hope you're right. Because I think I'd be able to be more calm about it if I knew it was going to work out. But in Sema we trust.
In Sema we trust. I'm excited for the next episode. I just don't want them to break up. That's the only thing I will be very upset about.
Because Sema is an amazing writer, I think she's setting the groundwork for them not to, because we've already gotten the potential divorce out of the way, because every marriage of convenience trope, they, for whatever reason, have to get fully divorced so they can get fully married again. One of my least favorite tropes. So I think we've set that up. We've gotten that out of the way. They weren't together as far as labels until recently. Mm. This last episode, in episode 18, they kind of had the define the relationship talk, which was kind of funny.
And can we talk for a second about the fact that Jaylen said she loves him?
That was really sweet.
It was perfect.
It was perfectly timed. And I think it was important that Ilga said it first and they didn't say it at the same time. You know, she said it of her own free will.
I think she said it in a moment where she truly meant it. She looked at that man and was like, I love you.
I know we could talk about Yarga for a full podcast, and we will, don't worry.
We will, dear listeners.
I think we should move on.
We should.
But the last show, I think, that we've both been watching is Utskarush.
I mean, I haven't watched it a ton, but yes.
Yeah, I am caught up.
Overachiever.
And Caro is slowly making her way through.
I'm on episode 4.
Proud of you.
Thank you.
I don't want to push you, but also I really want you to catch up because I have some unpopular opinions about the show that I want to talk to someone about.
Shocker.
Maybe not even on the podcast.
Maybe we can outsource Maya talking to someone about it. If you're out there with unpopular opinions, please reach out to her at...
And I do like it. I'm really enjoying the show. I do think it would be better as a binge. I don't really feel like enough happens per episode to feel super satisfied every time I watch.
See, this fuels my theory that some shows are better as a binge. I'm so satisfied watching Ashmantic Intikem as a binge, so much more than I was episode per episode. And now you're just making me want to wait even more for Utkarush.
No.
Because I'm not fully into it yet. Like, as we talked about, it takes a while to really form an attachment to a show. Like, I need the next episode right now. I'm not there yet.
Well, hurry up and get there, please.
And that's what we're watching. Should we get into the actual topic of today's podcast?
We should.
We teased it a little bit earlier. I said the name.
You said the name, and it's in the episode title.
Oh,
so if you're listening, you know what we're going to talk about. But...
it's Ashk 101.
Yes. This episode, we are talking about Ashk 101. It's known by its English title as Love 101. And usually I really stick to the Turkish names of shows, but for some reason, I think just because I watched it on Netflix and Love 101 was in the titles every time, I'm probably going to call it Love 101 more. But the titles are interchangeable.
And for those that don't know, you can find Ashk 101 on Netflix.
Yes. So this is the first Netflix show that we're going to talk about. And I believe this is the third Netflix original from Turkey.
Oh, interesting.
Kara, do you want to tell us about how you got into this show?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been watching Kara Para Aşk on Netflix, which, as a side note, highly, highly recommend that show. It's so good. And on Netflix, which is so easy to watch. And that was my first Netflix Dizzy that I had seen. And not that it was made for Netflix, but it was on there. And I enjoyed how easy it was to watch a Turkish show on Netflix. I wasn't searching for episodes. The subs were great. I didn't have to worry about ads. It was a beautiful thing. And I had seen a few people talking online about it. I think I had seen a fan vid or to pop up maybe about Sinan and Ishik. And I was like, okay, there's a ship there. I might watch it. It's on Netflix. I saw that it took place in the 90s, which as a child slash teen of the 90s, I was very excited about that. And it was also around the time that I had started watching Kara Sevda, because I didn't watch Love 101 until I think it aired before the pandemic or right around the pandemic start. So I didn't start watching it until much later. Like, I started watching it a few months before season 2 dropped. But yeah, so I had started watching Kara Sevda and was like, oh, the guy that plays Amir is in this. That'll be fun to see.
Little did you know.
Little did I know. So yeah, that's how I came to watch it. Again, highly recommend it. What about you, Maya? How did you get into it?
I don't 100% remember why I started it. I talked about this a little bit in episode 1, but after watching a couple Dizzies when I first started watching them, I took a bit of a break. And then right around when Love 101 was released, I think I was just scrolling on Netflix and I saw it. And I don't know what it was about it that made me want to watch. I think some people on Tumblr were talking about it because it had only been out for a couple days, I think. And I'm not a big teen drama watcher, but I have watched some in the past. And I just really liked watching shows in Turkish. And I was really curious to see how Netflix would approach a Turkish show based on the Dizzies I'd already seen. I couldn't imagine how they would be similar. So I was really curious about that. I think I just started it on a whim. And part of it was I didn't want to see spoilers on Tumblr. So I think that's part of the reason why I am on the pulse with some shows where I want to watch it as soon as it comes out, because I don't want it to be spoiled by other people, and I don't want to have to take the time to manage avoiding spoilers, so I'll just watch it immediately.
It's not easy.
So I watched it right around when it came out, and I'm gonna be honest, I did not like season 1.
I remember you telling me that, yeah.
I have this whole Tumblr rant about it, and a lot of it was my own fault, that it is a teen drama. I don't know what I expected. But for some reason, I just didn't get why people liked it, and it just felt like it could have been something different. I did have a good time being annoying about how much I didn't like it in my Tumblr thread. And the best part was, like, no one's paying attention. It's not easy to live blog anything on Tumblr. And then I really wasn't planning on watching season 2, but for some reason, when it came out and I started seeing the spoilers, I just thought, why not? Let's just see how they end it. I want to see what they do with it. And I wound up enjoying it a lot more by the end. And then in my rewatch for this podcast, I was surprised and a little disappointed in myself that I couldn't find any of the things that I guess I disliked. So
you liked it.
Fine. But on reflection, it was a fun time. So for the listeners, for this episode, we're going to try out a slightly new format for how we break down the show. It's an experiment like this entire podcast is. So you can let us know if you think it worked. Quick side note, this is editor Maya here to say we will in fact not be doing this format again because we recorded this episode on February 3rd and it is now May. We ended up recording over 3 hours and it has taken so much time to get through. So we would appreciate your feedback on this style of episode, but just know that we will not be doing it again for everyone's sanity. Okay, back to the episode. As we do with every show, we definitely want to start by explaining the premise of the show for anyone who hasn't seen it or anyone who hasn't seen it in a while, just so that everyone can be on the same page before Caro and I dive into our discussion.
Basic plot of Ash 101. It's the story about a group of seemingly troubled high school students and one do-gooder who are close to being expelled from school. Until now, they've been consistently saved by one teacher, Virju, played by the lovely Pinar Denise. Because expulsion requires a unanimous decision, and Virju has a soft spot for them, she tends to see the best in them. But her optimism can only go so far. However, the students find out that Virju has been offered a new teaching assignment back in her hometown, after which the principal has promised swift expulsion of the students. In order to prevent this, the students unite and make a plan. Find someone for Virju to fall in love with so she'll get married and stay in Istanbul. After some searching, the teens choose the new basketball coach, Kamal, as her potential suitor, engineering a series of run-ins to set them up all so that Virju will not leave and they will not get expelled. Over the course of this mission, the misfit teens find friendship, camaraderie, and love with each other. It's set in two timelines. Season one sets the stage for the audience to uncover what rift broke up the friend group after high school, with flash forwards to present day 20 years later as they wait to reunite. Season two answers the questions raised by season one, to an extent, and expands upon the teenagers' lives while they're still in school.
So this show has a set of key characters. It is about a friend group. There's the teens and there's the adults.
And then there's the teens as adults.
So instead of doing our usual full celebrity gossip behind the scenes section, we're just going to run you through who the key characters are and call that good, especially since a lot of these characters Caro and I haven't seen in a lot. So on the teen side, there are 5 main characters. The first one being Sinan, who's played by Mert Yazıcıoğlu. He's a very sympathetic character. He lives alone. He's kind of had to fend for himself his whole life as his parents have divorced and remarried and moved on to live with their separate families. And he's kind of the soul of the group. He's having a hard time all the time. But as you watch, you always hope that things will go better for him.
And then we've got Alina Boz, who plays the character Etta. Etta is a beautiful girl, expected to marry well to really help elevate the family from middle class. Etta craves real love away from expectations. She's an artist and the beauty of the group.
We then have Kerem, who's played by Kubilay Aka. He is a bit of a hothead. He struggles to escape the stigma of his family. He copes with a lack of love from his father with anger and a lot of physical outbursts, which tends to get him into trouble. If you're gonna assign labels to all the characters, he is definitely the muscle of the group.
Yeah, I did like that part of the show, that they each almost represent something, which is why, in my opinion, it's a nice group dynamic.
Yeah.
Moving on, there is Epic Felice Yazıcı as Işık, arguably the heart of the show. She suffers from almost too much love from her parents, who she tries to please while struggling with wanting to be her own person.
Selahattin Paşalı plays Osman. Osman starts out season one definitely as a hustler. He's a businessman in training. He's a clean-cut guy. He has his gang of misfit nerds who he uses to help run cheating scams where he sells homework assignments to richer and more popular students. He's always looking to make money while eating his signature hazelnuts. Arguably, he's the brains of the operation. For the adults in the 90s timeline, we have our lovely Pinar Deniz, who plays the teacher Virju, who, as we've said, is very sweet and optimistic and cares a lot about the kids. And then Kamal is played by Kaan Ergancıoğlu as the grumpy new basketball coach who the students try to set Virju up with.
Which brings us to the setting of the show. You know, I think one of the most notable things about the setting is it really taps into the nostalgia of the 90s. I was a kid in the 90s. And I think part of the reason why I liked this show so much was it reminded me of The Cluelesses and The 10 Things I Hate About You and really that teen drama comedy. It reminded me a lot of Clueless, to be honest, like when they try to get the teachers together. I loved it. It really sparked a memory.
That's good. I have as a bullet, did it work? And you are the person who I would ask to see if it worked because I was technically a child of the 90s.
Is that what you're getting?
No, I was technically a child of the 90s, but I was a toddler of the 90s. So I don't know if I'm the authority to say whether it worked or not. When I was watching the show, part of me wondered, was having it set in the 90s necessary? Like, what does that do for the story as a whole? But then it made me think, well, if we are beginning the show with a 20-year time jump to what is arguably the present day, then because of how time works, it has to be set in the 90s.
Yes.
But I still am on the fence if having it be set in the 90s is necessary. I mean, they didn't have cell phones. It took out a lot of ways that maybe plots would fall apart with modern technology. I'm not sure if the adult timeline has enough of a sway, but it did have a nice cohesive vibe.
It was a choice, and it allowed some great 90s music to be played, which was fun.
That was something that was interesting to watch. As someone who has watched some Turkish shows and also seen American teen movies, the blend of Western music as well as Turkish music. It was a little jarring, but in a fun way. I think it worked.
And what was jarring for me is not all of it was 90s music. I'm pretty sure there was some Tom Odell and some Pablo Nutini thrown in there during the 90s scenes. But it was nice because one of the things I think is interesting is the music choices in Turkish shows.
Yeah.
And so much of it, they play the same songs over and over again. So I stayed with my parents for a period of time in December where I did watch some Turkish shows. And the only comment my mom made to me was, I know you're watching Turkish shows because they play the same song and I hear it every time you watch the show. And it's true. Like in Ashmanti Intikim, for example, there's that same thread of that song. That's all they play. There's no new music. It's just that same chord. So it was very refreshing for me in this show that they played a ton of different music. Music I knew, American music mixed with some Turkish music. I personally really liked it.
That Netflix music license budget.
Oh, love that budget.
So let's dive into season one and the story itself.
Now, this was released right, this was like the start of the pandemic, really. This was like April 2020, season one.
It was, and it's so interesting to me to see the date written out that way, because in my head, I don't remember it as being pandemic times. Maybe it was just denial, I guess, but
you
I don't
associate. It's okay.
I don't associate it with a lot of the shows that I know I watched during the pandemic. But let's just dive in and talk about the show. Because even though on my rewatch, I liked it a lot more than I remembered, I do still stand by the fact that the premise, if you really think about it, is nonsense. Just...
Well, that's your problem, Maya. You're thinking too hard about it. You should do what I do and just suspend disbelief and go along for the ride.
Because... The whole thing about the students having to band together, they're about to actually get expelled, but Burcu's one vote keeps it from being unanimous. That's a great jumping off point, but their solution has so many ways it could go wrong. There's so many variables where they're like, you know what's gotta happen is we gotta get this woman married. Like, it's not like they see her in a serious relationship or anything. They just decide, you know what's gotta happen? A wedding. And also we have, what, a month to do this?
Right. They can't just ask her and say, you're our favorite teacher. We love you. Please stay. No.
And the thing is, when Burcu opens her transfer letter and asks the principal, are you going to expel them? And he's like, yeah. She says, well, I can just defer a year. Mm-hmm. Why did they make that an option for us as the audience to know if then she's just naively like, okay, I'll leave. Like,
that's a good point.
That's why I was just from the beginning, I was like, this is so fixable already.
But maybe the kids didn't know that. Like, that's the thing.
The kids
like,
didn't know, but Burcu did. She could have.
They did, but
they
could have
just asked her. They could have just asked her.
You're thinking too logically about this. And then we wouldn't get my favorite trope of all time, which I discussed in our Atta Masala episode, where you've got the grumpy person who meets the sunshine And then the sunshine starts to pull the grumpy one out of the darkness. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I absolutely love when that happens. And the show, that was part of the draw for me, was I love that. And this didn't disappoint.
I'll give you that. That was great. It's just, if you zoom out far enough, the premise is just kind of ridiculous. It's hilarious, but I'm not going to apologize for wanting to be logical and wanting to poke holes in stories. But sometimes I wish I didn't have to zoom out so far. Because once you're in it, fine. But I can't.
To quote from Clueless, it's like a Monet. It looks good from far away, but when you get up close, it's a mess.
Sure, we can have that. Maybe we can even invert it. Like, if you get too far away, it's a mess. But if you zoom in really close and shut out everything else, it works. And then, okay, we get to the point where they're like, all right, we're going to get her to fall in love. They don't have a candidate in mind.
Nope.
Who do we know that knows about love? And they decide to corner Ishik, who's a known romantic, kind of a naive girl, very optimistic. And they decide she's going to tell us how this is going to go down. Again, it's just the variables, Caro. It's just, was there no other way for them to do this?
To be fair, though, if you think about it, none of the characters know love, though. They all have their own damage, and they don't have any experience with true love, except for Ishik, who
has
the love of her
parents. But she doesn't either.
Well, but she almost has too much love from her parents. It's like a smothering love. But it's there, more so than anyone, especially more so than Sinan, who is absolutely devoid of any human love, and I just want to hug him the whole show.
That was why I stuck with season one, because of Sinan. Also, he's quite cute, and the actor is older than me, which didn't weird me out liking a teen playing character.
I think of that when I watch it, because like there's so many attractive men on Turkish shows, and you're like, meh, but Mert does it for you.
It's not, it's not that. I do, there's so many, I have crushes on characters more than on actors. We don't need to unpack that. But
he's very cute. He's very cute. Don't get me wrong. He's a good choice. And he absolutely nails the character of Sinan, because your heart just bleeds for him. He's got the saddest eyes. Oh,
yeah.
He does pathetic very well.
Yeah. Netflix went all out with that under eye makeup.
Let's talk about one of my favorite couples, at least in season one. I mean, we can get into the season two version of them later, but Kerem and Ada. They have such a unique relationship on the show. I really loved them. I just kind of liked how they didn't like each other at first, and then they complimented each other really well, and then they started to date a little bit, but she was kind of stringing this other guy along, and I liked them.
Yeah, I did too. I like their dynamic a lot, and I agree. I like that it wasn't an insta-love. We're together forever. There was a lot of give and take, and all of these characters are really flawed and have their own insecurities and shortcomings. And so they complemented each other really well, where Kerem kind of dove into using brute strength and anger as a way of coping with the world. And Etta liked the unpredictability and I guess the teenage danger associated with him. But then she had her own insecurities about not getting too close and liking the power of stringing people along.
Well, I think she really struggled with the fact that her parents had her on this path that she really didn't want to be on. And I think she liked the freedom that Kerem exemplified for her.
Yeah. Neither of them maybe had super healthy ways of interacting with the world. And honestly, in my rewatch, it reminded me, I totally forgot that Etta has a bit of an eating disorder.
Yeah, I forgot about that too.
I think in that way, it was a really well-written teenage relationship that felt, if not realistic, very plausible.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting and what I liked about the show is everyone has their own damage, even the adults.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true with life. As you get older, you realize that everyone really does have their own issues that they're dealing with. And what you see on Instagram isn't real life. Everyone's dealing with their own things. And this show is no different, where every single character has issues, some more than others. Like, I would argue that Sinan maybe has slightly more issues than anyone else.
That poor boy.
The poor boy. boy. But one of the things I loved, and I think you agree with me here, is the Kamal Sinan father pseudo son relationship. It was really well done, and it really gave heart to Kamal, who came off very cold at first. He kind of comes off as a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
As the show starts. And then there's just that moment where he gives Sinan his jacket in the rain.
Yeah.
And you just know that this is such an act of kindness to this character, Sinan, who copes by drinking because his life is absolutely miserable. And you just feel warm inside because it's so sweet.
Yeah.
And then there's that moment where Kamal says something along the lines of, I hate 17-year-olds. I hated myself at 17. That you just kind of knew he was a good one.
There's that one moment where he kind of loses it alone in his office. And you realize that he has this old injury that's kept him from his athletic career. And I'm sure being a coach probably wasn't his plan. And seeing all these teens do what he can't do anymore has got to suck. And so while he and Sinan have different backgrounds, they have a lot of similarities in how they experience hardship. Yeah, that father-son dynamic, so good. One of the top relationships for me in this show.
It was.
This is maybe a bit of a tangent, but something that the show does in season one is use birds as symbolism for love a lot. There's pigeons in the windowsill. There's pigeons everywhere. There's drawings of birds in shots. And all of it is because it's a line I believe Ishik says early on about birds arriving when there's going to be love. And the show really leaned into that, which I found a bit funny because from what I know about Turkey, especially Istanbul, is that there are cats everywhere. There's even a documentary called Kedi that's just about the cats of Istanbul.
Really?
I like the documentary. It's kind of sweet. And if you watch regular network Dizzies, you'll see cats everywhere. You'll see street dogs, but cats especially. And sometimes they're just in shots because the crews don't even try to really shoot around them. And it's something that I always enjoy when I see it because that just feels very Turkish. And you watch this show, there are birds everywhere. Are there stunt pigeons? Because there are some shots that are very intentional looking, but there's not a single cat anywhere. And I want to know, did they edit them out? Did they shoot around them?
Netflix had the budget to have cat removers. They just hired people specifically to do that,
though. I just found that really funny.
No, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I did not pick up on that. So that's interesting. Should we talk about Osman always having hazelnuts?
Yes, because that's another thing where it's so random.
It's so random.
But by the end of the whole show, it's an endearing character trait.
Loved it.
But it cracked me up for season one. It just became this symbolic hazelnuts of friendship. When he's thinking, when he's working, and then when they're all together, Osman has just, I guess, a handful in his pocket that he can share with the group.
I'm not sure I would eat hazelnuts out of my friend's pocket, but you know what?
Maybe you're just not good enough friends.
Maybe I'm not, no. I will say too, do you want to know what part cracked me up in my rewatch? The part where the kids go over Ishik's house to try to convince her mother to let her go. And Sinan is drunk. He looks drunk. He looks miserable. And he keeps trying to sneak a sip of alcohol. And Osman and Kerem are around him trying to make him look presentable. He does not look good.
And then Kerem's asking for chocolate milk for them. I was like, okay.
Kerem is a low-key favorite of mine. Like,
he really comes around.
He does. But yeah, that scene.
In season one, there's that painting in Sinan's house that Ishik, when she comes to give him soup when he's sick, which, side note, one of my favorite lines in season one is when they're doing their random coat experiment with Kamal and Tunjay, seeing which one's kinder.
Oh, yeah.
I think Ishik is worried about Sinan and hopes that Kamal will come through and give him his coat. And then Kerem says, and it's also the Netflix translation, but Kerem says, if I saw a motherfucker as sick looking as Sinan, I'd give him my coat too. And that made me laugh so hard both times I watch it. I don't know why. That just made me laugh.
There's some gems in the show. And also one of the things I loved was the special dynamic between Kerem and Sinan. Like, they really have this brotherly connection that comes out in certain moments, certainly in season two. It is a slow burn, but it is deep. I don't know if that's corny to say or not, but it's very sweet. And that's, like, overall, you, Maya, can nitpick the show as much as you want.
And I will.
And you will. But I think why I personally love it so much is it has so much heart. there's so many great dynamics between characters individually with each other, but as a whole, like, they become a family of friends that really do love each other. It's very sweet and uplifting to watch. And despite their awful traumas and their issues that they're dealing with, they come to love each other. And it's just so sweet.
Yeah.
So you nitpick away. You're not going to take away my happiness of this show.
I will continue to nitpick.
Now, that painting you mentioned, is that the one that also makes an appearance in season two?
Does it make an appearance in season two? Because I sped through season two today in about 2 hours. I didn't have time. I procrastinated. No, I was just working.
Doesn't she take the painting?
Oh! Adult Edda gives it back to adult Ishik in season one.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's that painting. And when Ishik comes to take care of sick Sinan, she's looking at it and... The scene is very sweet in that we see Sinan washing Ishik and her, I don't want to call it innocence or naivete, but there is some of that in there. But just her light, I guess her name literally means light.
Does it?
And he gets to see her excitement about this painting. And then a few scenes later, he doesn't let his dad take it away.
Yeah.
It's this powerful moment for them of giving Sinan maybe some hope. Everything about it, great. Except... for the painting itself. And I know I'm not an art historian. I love a lot of art. I know what kinds of art I like and what I like less. But could we have picked any other painting? Maybe there's some Turkish art history significance that I'm missing. But I just wish it had been a different painting. I know it's just the weirdest thing to nitpick. But it's just a really random painting choice for what it does for the story.
All right, now let's talk about one of the...
Well, you have nothing to say about that? You're just going to let me rant about the painting and move on?
Again, I'm not thinking that critically about the show. I'm just enjoying it for what it is.
Fine.
Okay, I mean, I could say that the painting is symbolic because it is not a thing of beauty if you really look at it, but the symbolism of it is beautiful, which is very similar to the dynamic of friendship groups that are displayed in the show.
I hate that you're making sense right now. Now we can move on.
I just want to talk about Kamal and Burcu because I'm obsessed with Pinkan.
Yes. The two of them did get me through season one of my first watch. They were very sweet.
Their chemistry is just there. I mean, when you've got it, you've got it. And I think they're so lucky as actors to have found a partner that their chemistry just sizzles.
It does.
Because it doesn't happen with everyone. What's interesting is, like, does Burcu really need to have a fiance who's absolutely awful? That, to me, that's one of the things where I will nitpick because I think it's an annoying aspect. She's such a good character. I don't feel like she's dumb enough to date a guy who's that terrible.
Ironically, this is something that I do think we kind of need in this show. Only because Burcu says later on in season one, I can't remember who she's talking to, if it's Edda or
probably someone else,
but she recognized that part of the reason she didn't want the kids to get expelled is she didn't want the responsibility of their futures falling on her head. She didn't want to feel responsible for that. And I think before, like, she had a prior engagement and it was definitely set up by their families. And I think there is a part of her that wants to meet expectations. And yes, she's so strong-willed at work and a defender of these kids and wanting to be a positive force in their education and upbringing. But I think it was important to see the mousier side of her where there were parts of her life where she was just going along with what she was told and what people thought was good for her. And then you enter Kamal into the equation and she realizes that there is a more fulfilling relationship out there for her. Her life story can go a different way, and then it's pivotal that she gets to make that choice to break off her engagement and pursue what's good for her.
And make it she does. That breakup scene is fantastic.
It's so good. Seeing how she stood firm and fielded all those phone calls from relatives, and you know that Tunjay was not getting those phone calls. It was just her being told she was a disappointment, and she handled it, and she did it alone too. Kamal didn't know she was broken up. She didn't do it because anyone told her to. Mm-hmm. She made a decision for herself and she dealt with the consequences even when they were upsetting. And I was so proud of her for that.
I was too. It was a proud moment. And it all leads up, obviously, to the scene where they're in Kamal's office and he knows that she's engaged, or thinks she's engaged, rather. And he has this speech when he's like, why him and not me? Why can't it be me? Pick me and let's do this. Let's try this out. And he's such a grumpy character, Kamal, and he really doesn't show a lot of emotion. So this scene for him is actually a really big declaration. And the fact that Burju shows no emotion really throughout it. And then at the end, it's just like, okay.
I love that.
I loved it.
That was so good.
He was making a declaration. And for me, that's a top moment in season one.
And it's definitely a character turning point. Because Burju had her moment of deciding, I'm not going to let myself be herded along through my life. I'm taking a stand for myself. And Kamal doesn't have an issue being direct, but what he does have an issue is showing that he deeply cares about something. He's pretty apathetic in a lot of ways.
Yes.
So him being so open and honest, even after they both know he's been disappointed that she turns out to be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big moment for him too.
Let's talk a little bit about the ending. Do you want to talk a little bit about the apology?
Yes. This is where nitpicky Maya comes out again, or maybe it's just Maya in general. The ending of season one frustrated me so much.
Really?
I had gotten into it. I was like, fine, we're here. I'm definitely finishing it. It's not a hard show to watch. I think I watched it in two sittings.
I love how you're enjoying it out of spite. You're like, fine, whatever. I liked it.
Because I'm not going to relinquish the fact that I did dislike it, and I think I have cause, but I'm also willing to admit that on second perusal, I enjoyed it more. I'm not going to hold firm to my opinions to that degree. I'm willing to change, but only so far. But the ending of season one derails the entire premise of the previous episodes. The whole show, what is the goal? We're not gonna get expelled. As much as we hate authority and feel like our principal, who truly does not have a life, the amount that he hates these children.
Yeah, he needs a hobby for sure.
That is insane. But then we get to the end where they decide, okay, an apology is in order. Granted, the apology they have to read is ridiculous, and it's so smug of this adult man who just needs some hobbies, I guess. Like, why is he so obsessed with what these kids think of him? So that scene, obviously they weren't gonna like it. They're gonna do it. They've decided to swallow their pride because their education and their futures are important to them. And yet they go up on the podium and they just say, screw all of you, we'll get expelled. What was the point? They'd been building to this. And then the show ends with them getting kicked out? What?
Does it actually show them getting kicked out, or is it just assumed? I forget.
Well, they burn their uniforms afterwards.
No, that's right. Alright.
Which I also thought was extreme.
It was extreme. But there's a couple of moments in the show where it's extreme. I think the fight between Karem.
The fight in the science lab with all the broken glass?
Yeah, that's a little extreme. Like, as an adult, they should be expelled for that.
Yeah.
I know I'm no longer a teenager when I'm agreeing with the adults in the show.
No, that was so dramatic and so funny. But
no, I agree. It is a little odd that they spend the entire premise of the show working towards a goal so they don't get expelled. And then when the moment presents itself, they do the opposite. I, again, didn't think that critically of it and was like, well, this is them. You know, they've grown a little bit over the course of the season. And this is them standing firm in their belief that they're being unfairly judged. Instead of just saying, like, A, the fact that he had to have them give a public apology speaks to his fragile ego, the principal's fragile ego. But also, he's whispering in their ear, like, I was in the right. Like, I forget exactly what he said, but he's almost creepy, the principal.
Yeah, he should not have the job that he has.
He should not.
I think the biggest part of it for me was that the characters saw it as a win. I think what would have worked for an ending like that is that we go through the whole arc of season one. They truly are trying their best, and then they do get kicked out for circumstances they can't control, like a final strike gets them kicked out and they're disappointed. I think that could have been a big turning point because finally they've actually applied themselves to school and now it's been taken away from them. It wouldn't have been a huge leap to shift the ending a little bit. But when we got to the end, I was already not having the best time watching season one. But then you get there, and I'm like, really? This is what I held out for? For them just U-turning the whole point?
I know, but it leads to the cliffhanger. Because there's a couple of cliffhangers. One, you're curious how they're going to resolve the mess that they just made by telling the truth. And then you've got adult Ishik and Edda at the mansion. And then there's the knock at the door. Who's at the door? So then this brings us to season two, which was released on September 30th, 2021. And we're now in a post-COVID world. Season one was shot pre-COVID. Now this is post-COVID. And it becomes very clear very quickly that they didn't plan very well from season one to season two.
Exactly. If you look at season one as a whole, especially with the adults, they've set it up so loosely, but not in a way, like we couldn't have had the show end after season one. If it hadn't been renewed, it would have felt incomplete. But at the same time, you can't picture enough content to give you a season two. So the cliffhanger at the end of season one, I was like, I guess we need to keep this going and find out more about what happened to the teenagers after high school, like why they're no longer friends. Why is there this adult timeline at all? But then the way season two introduces this is quite weird. And we don't see the adults for a lot of season two.
Agreed. It is weird the way they did it. And I'll preface this by saying I very much enjoyed season two, and season two has some of my favorite moments, but I'm more critical of it because of the inconsistencies with season one. Like season one very clearly set up, all right, who's coming back? What happened to them as adults? You kind of want to know that, and they thread you along, but they really don't answer that except to showcase Edda and Ishik, right? So now I want to know more about that. They gave us hints in season one as to where some of them ended up, but didn't give us the full picture. So for me, that's what I really wanted for season two. But like you said, they still focused a lot on the teenagers.
Which was fine, but it just really solidified to me. Did it need to be set in the 90s plus have a time jump? We could have done this whole story without the adult version. Like, that premise was not compelling enough. They didn't frame the narrative in a way that showed us, you know, because there's some shows and books and things where I love that plot where everything is going great, but they've told us at the beginning that it's going to end badly and we're just slowly waiting to get there. This show just dropped that plot and picked it up randomly. That's why I always get frustrated about things like this. It could have been so much better. But even like you were saying, they drop little hints about what's happened to the adult characters. But rewatching season one, those hints do not line up with the events of season two.
No, they don't at all.
I don't think the writers knew where they wanted the adults to end up, but what they had set up was not how they ended up. Okay, so quick recap of the adult plot, because it's quite short. Ishik is breaking into the boarded up mansion, Sinan's old house, and trying to air the place out and cooking a bit.
While it's falling apart.
And you're never sure how long she's there in those flashbacks. Like, is it just that one day? Is she living there? Because she sits there and she sends out some letters, which doesn't make sense either, because Ishik's birthday in season one, she's like, let's meet back here in 20 years, no matter what. And then later Ishik's like writing letters like, hey, maybe we should meet up again. That didn't quite match up. But then you see these faceless people that the letters get delivered to. Someone's working on a farm. And then if you look at season two, I can't think of who that would be unless Osman has a hobby farm, which does not seem to be the case. Mm-hmm. There is a woman who we have to assume is Edda, because she's the only other woman, in the kitchen with some kids playing around, which in season one I thought was trying to imply that she's married and submitted to her parents' expectations. But then in season two, she's unmarried. She went and followed her dream.
Yep.
Which does not align.
Nope.
And then there's someone in prison, and that can be salvaged because Kerem is a defense attorney for criminals. But the way that that's shown in season one is the back of his head, and he's in a cell, like he's a prisoner.
Yeah. So literally nothing matches up. Not one bad story.
And then even in season one, they didn't make those adult characters compelling enough. And yet they tried to make them super important. And then in season two are like, and look at them now. I'm like, no. The biggest takeaway is that the show didn't seem to have a plan. And I don't know if that was Netflix doing a teen Turkish show for the first time. Were they thinking it wasn't going to do well and just that it would end after one season?
I don't know.
If that was the case, they should have wrapped up season one with an open ending, but at least an ending.
Was it different writers?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Yeah, my opinion is they probably realized they wanted to move in a different direction. And they were like, ooh, maybe no one will notice.
Yeah. That seems right. And I think also because when they were making season two, they knew it was the last one. They're like,
yeah,
we don't have these threads to keep open. We got to cut it off and give them a happily ever after.
Right. And then it felt very much like a Band-Aid plot with how it moved forward with the teenagers in terms of like they didn't get expelled.
Yeah.
Now they're on like a new mission to get Nejdet fired because he's basically blackmailing them into submission by telling that he'll expel Ishik.
Yeah. And she only has one thing on her record, I guess, which is the bad apology.
Mm-hmm.
that makes even less sense, and are no adults gonna step in? I mean, I guess it's a teen show where it's like, the adults are against us, they don't understand us. But season two just kind of chugs along, like, by the way, we're back in school, and everything's fine now, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit of a band-aid there, but I can suspend disbelief and go with it. I know you can't, but I say it with love.
I know, I think. Season two had a lot more plot threads going on than I remember in my brief rewatch earlier today. But at the same time, they did recycle some ideas, which made no sense to me. I don't 100% know what her name is. I think it's Biri, but I call her the hot teacher.
Yeah.
The woman who's obsessed with Kamal.
Mm-hmm.
She's there a lot, still trying to break up their relationship, where ostensibly Birju and Kamal have had this lovely summer romance between school years.
Yeah, there's photos of them up in their respective houses. Yes.
I don't know. I know why the writers put her there as an obstacle, but it just felt unoriginal at this point. And then there was that one episode where Birju's ex-fiance Chunje shows up with his new wife.
Oh yeah, that was a weird plot filler.
On my season two bingo card, that was nowhere near anything I expected to happen. Was this needed? No.
I have no words because I don't know. It stumps me.
There's also the way Ishik is written around in season two, where she's not there a whole lot.
It's very noticeable.
You and I were talking about this the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory that it was a scheduling conflict because she was in the short-lived show Yeni Hayat. And that started airing in September of 2020. And I think because this is a Netflix show that they shoot all at once and they're dealing with COVID, my prediction is that that filming schedule couldn't accommodate her sporadic availability for her Dizzy, so they just decided that they weren't gonna try to have her around as much. I think that her storyline kind of worked. I don't think you liked it as much, Caro, if I'm not mistaken.
It just feels weird because it feels like she's in her own prison,
mm-hmm.
but she's not. She's just at her aunt's house. She can theoretically leave whenever she wants, and yet she doesn't. She basically stays there like a princess in a castle. So for me, it felt very deliberate. They were trying to write around her. I agree with your theory. I think there's probably something to it because there's so many great scenes where the four characters are together, and it just feels a little incomplete.
Yeah. I will say her absence did help the way Sinan was being pulled farther down by his demons.
You thought he had a bad season one, but season two.
Everything. That poor kid. His grandfather dies. His parents want to sell the house he lives in and don't know what to do with him.
And they outright say, he can't come with me. Like, oh my God, that is your child.
Right. And you see that little part inside of him, I don't know, just kind of die, where you can tell he still wants to be loved by his parents or by someone.
Oh yeah.
He's not going to outright say it, but he makes it easy for them. He's like, oh yeah, I'm going to stay at a friend's house or
I know
whatever excuse he makes. And then he just lives in the school basement.
With the dog.
With the dog. And then his dog gets sick.
I know. That's when I was like, are you seriously going to kill the dog? You're really going to go there, writers? They didn't, though.
So having Ishik not be there for him at school and sometimes pushing him away, it did serve to just really push him into a dark place.
Yeah, he didn't have the life raft of her life. He was very much a hopeless character in season two. Again, he does pathetic really well.
I want to protect him. And then he starts a fire. He almost dies in a fire.
Oh my God. So let's talk about that for a moment. When you watched it for the first time, did you think he was going to die?
I mean, at that point, so many terrible things had happened. I mean, I didn't think so.
I did, because they hadn't shown him in the future yet.
Yeah, but they hadn't shown a lot of things in the future that they should have, so.
It's true, but it still crossed my mind. And I was like, are you kidding me? This is how we end? But thankfully, Karem was there to save the day. And then they had that really sweet moment after he saves them.
Exactly. Everyone in the teen friend group had different dynamics with different characters. And especially in season one, Karem and Sinan were a bit at odds, even though there was an unspoken attachment between the whole group. But this moment, you see how much Sinan's friends do care about him. Because that was something that frustrated me so much at the beginning of season two, is that no one notices when he's not there. They're so wrapped up in everything else that I understand, but he doesn't come to school after his grandfather dies. No one knows. He's just sinking.
Mm.
And there aren't people there for him. So having Karem come there and directly tell him that they love him and need him in their lives was really important.
I think he calls him his brother, which I thought was really poignant.
Another element of season two is that we're introduced to a new teen, and that is the character of Elif, and she is this transfer. She's a piano prodigy, and her dad is important in the higher ups of the school district. So Nejdet is really rolling out the red carpet for this girl. And that adds a new dynamic to the teens because there's another one there. She's at odds, especially with Ozma at the beginning, and then she kind of comes into the fold. You and I had very different reactions to her as a character. I didn't mind her. You, on the other hand, had some strong feelings.
I do. I have some very strong feelings about this, which I've shared with Maya extensively over our friendship. In my opinion, she just doesn't fit the group dynamics. She doesn't fit so much that it distracts me from the show. And that's my issue. Nothing about her personality fits. And I don't know whether it's just a chemistry issue, whether it's a writing issue, whether it's the actress. I don't know if she was the right choice as the actress to play Elif. And I know this actress then went on to Yharga, which is hilarious. But I really, really don't like the character of Elif. I don't think she's necessary. I think she was thrown in there as a love interest for Osman, who she has negative chemistry with. Kiss and have a kissing scene. I can't even watch it. I just have this visceral response where I'm like, my eyes, my eyes. I don't like it at all. When I did my little rewatch, I fast-forwarded almost all of her scenes. I understand she does help the group in their schemes. She really is integral in bringing down Nejdet, but oh, hard pass.
I mean, you do you, I guess.
The epitome of that meme that you love from White Collar. Pass.
That gif is my personality. I make no apologies. I love it greatly. To be clear, I didn't see her as someone who should be part of the core four or core five of the original friend group, but if they were going to give Ozma a love interest, because I couldn't picture what that kind of person would look like, so she, to me, was as good as anything, but I get your point. But with a show like this, and with the writing that is sometimes super solid and sometimes very random, she didn't stick out to me as something deeply out of the ordinary.
But I also think they're a cool group of people. They're not losers. They're not the downtrodden. I mean, yes, Sinan has his issues. But like, but overall, they're kind of cool kids, right? And Ishik's this sweet character that they kind of bring into the fold. And they almost make her a little cooler by being a part of it. But Elif's a nerd. Like, she's not at their level of cool. And it just doesn't work. In real life, they would not have hung out with Elif. It just wouldn't have happened.
That's fair. I'll give you that. I did like that the show focused on the pressure of high school education and final exams. Like, I think that whole plot line of Nejdet really doubling down on test scores and singling people out for talent just to meet a quota, just to fit into some box in society. I thought that was a nice underlying idea to explore in the show. Because I do think media, books and shows and movies that are made for teens should be for them.
Yeah. I enjoyed it because I haven't watched a Turkish drama yet that really was about teens. Most of the ones I've watched are about adults. So it's interesting because it's different than America. I really loved the scenes where they get their acceptance letters and they're just so happy and so excited.
Because season two was the final season, of course, they had all of these couples that they set up that they needed to wrap up. One of them being Kerem and Etta, who I think we both very much enjoyed.
Yeah. And I like their scenes in season two. I love the scene where she escapes from her engagement. She literally jumps out the window and her and Kerem have this adventure where they really promise themselves to each other. And it's almost like a mini story inside of this story. Like, you kind of forget what you're watching for a very short period of time.
Like we said in season one, it takes them a bit to admit that they want to be together. And then clearly they've had a summer where they were together in some form. And then it's them dealing with the future and what that looks like for them and if they're gonna last. And they're both very stubborn, hard and fast personalities. It's not that they softened his character, but we just got to see a lot more of him than just the angry kid, where he really cares about Etta and wants her to succeed to the point where he signs her up for these art classes because he knows she wants to be an artist, even though her parents want her to just have a respectable life. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really great. And then you also get to see Edda have to confront the idea that no matter how passively good she is at something, she does have to commit and try and practice and learn, and her natural talent is only going to get her so far. And I thought that was really powerful and something that Karam was super supportive of and wanted her to have, which made their little adventure where he proposes to her and they're going to be together. It didn't feel as cheesy as it definitely could have.
It was sweet. It really exemplified the hopefulness and idyllicness of young love. In that moment, they really believed that they could do it and that they could commit to each other. No, I really liked that moment. Another one of the moments I really liked is that Karem really passes that test because he's listening to Ada's tapes that she doesn't know she's making for him. So I loved that little nugget of the show. It was just so sweet how they were connected and Ada had no idea what she did for him.
I liked that Edda didn't know, but I also like that Karem accepted it. He actually wanted to try, and not for anyone else, but for himself. And then our big couple are Kamal and Birju.
Burkham.
I mean, we have to talk about them.
We do, because shock of all shocks, I have a big issue with them in season two.
I understand why, because another example of the show clearly realizing that they were going to continue, didn't know what to do with them.
That's the thing. These writers always think you have to do something. You don't always have to do something with a couple. You could have just let them be. Like, you literally could have had the drama of he gets this amazing job offer somewhere else. That alone, I think, would have been enough, because you've got so much going on with the kids.
No, you're right. The basketball job was plenty of drama. And there was also the drama of Birju stepping down from her position a little bit because she didn't agree with Nejdet, and then Kamal stepping up for his own reasons. And that could have caused conflict between them, but they could have still been together because they clearly had a lovely summer together.
Right. The show starts off with them in bed, which was hot, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Netflix.
Thank you, Netflix. So for those that don't know what we're talking about, my big issue, and I think I can speak for Maya, is that Birju has this insecurity with Kamal where she doesn't feel good enough to be with him. And I think it comes out of nowhere.
Especially when they introduce it in that opening scene. It's so manufactured feeling.
Yes.
If they had been together at school and there'd been tension and that was the conflict of the show, I could kind of get it, because Birju is a mousy character.
Yes.
But you were talking about this the other day, where the way her insecurity comes out makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
She's in his bed.
Yep.
And she's like, I don't know if you like me.
It's implied that they just had sex. She's in lingerie. They're in bed together. He literally couldn't be more into her. There's no indication from him whatsoever that he's not fully into her. And she just has this dread that she's not good enough for him. Now I get it. You never really know with a partner, and there's always going to be that insecurity, but this was a strong insecurity. And not only that, when they talk about it, he's like, oh, you don't think I like you that much? Fine, we should break up. Like, what? No, that's a leap, Kamal.
Yeah, especially for someone who's so apathetic to suddenly, like, I have my pride. You're like, why? What?
Where did pride come? Like, what role does that play? It felt just like they were making drama to have drama when I didn't think they needed it. Like, have them disagree with some school decisions. Kamal ends up getting a job offer to coach a more professional basketball team, where he leaves, doesn't tell her. She comes over in that hot red dress, ready to make up with him. It's just an absolute disaster.
Truly. Because, yeah, he accepts the job like, I have nothing here. And he doesn't give her any indication of his plan. It's also mid-school year.
Yeah.
And then she comes to his house wanting to make up. And he's like, well, if I'd known, I wouldn't have left. No, you made the decision. You're moving.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I mean, if you tell me to stay, I'll stay. What is she supposed to say?
I know.
She has her very kind of heartbreaking speech about, I'm a teacher. People leave once they're done. And I understand that. I lose a lot of relationships that way, but I understand it's for the better. Maybe our relationship is like that, where I have to lose you too. That was such a good scene. But the way it came about, where he's like, yeah, but if you want me, then I won't go. What is she supposed to say? No, that's a cop-out for her. You can't put that on her.
That's the thing. Kamal puts way too much on her instead of just using his words and telling her how he feels, which, I mean, probably prompted her whole insecurity in general, but it just felt really rushed. And it's sad because, as we all know, Pinar and Khan have excellent chemistry. You don't need to work that hard for them to really do great things on the screen. Honestly, I think one of my favorite scenes was when they're on the phone with each other talking. Like, there's chemistry in that scene.
And they're not even in the same room.
No.
So good. I love
those. They're not even
talking
to each other, actually. They're just recording with a phone and you feel chemistry.
So good.
It does all lead up, though, to that really hot kiss when he comes back.
Yeah, that almost makes it worth it.
Oh, when he drops the bag and she's just there.
And the red dress again. That was so good.
Although I actually don't love that she was wearing the red dress because she says in the beginning that it's not her. So I kind of wish she was wearing something that she wasn't wearing just to impress him. But
I don't know. I interpreted that as her confidence being there, her confidence in their relationship. So
it's not a hill I'm going to die on.
Good. That seems like a good choice. And I just have to add one more thing about this, where it cracks me up that Kamal just has this weird job security at this school.
Oh, yes.
For someone who is so apathetic, where he's like, I'm gonna leave mid-school year. I'm gonna be gone for, what, a month?
Yep.
We don't know how long he was gone. And then he comes back, especially to, I think he goes right back to his vice principal job.
Oh, yeah. They're just like, oh, we're so glad you're back. I had whiplash. In real life, they would have been like, we already hired someone else.
Yeah, so we don't agree with how they did use this couple in the show, but I do love them. I love their chemistry. And this came out right around when Yargo was coming out and just...
It was Pinkan overload and it was glorious. What a time to be alive.
They're such good actors. I love when they share the screen together. So if this is all we got, I don't hate it.
I don't hate it.
It could have definitely been better, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. And it is enjoyable. I like they had a happy ending. That made me happy.
Yeah.
Should we move on to Sinan and Ishik, who have a very interesting ending on the show?
Yes.
Arguably my favorite moment in maybe almost any TV show. Like, I love it so much. It's up there for me.
Their relationship was so unexpected. I was very pleasantly surprised with how the two of them ended up. Not that I expected them to break up or anything.
Well, I thought he was going to die, so.
But it was just one of those, it could go either way. And the fact they end up together and Sinan doesn't fall completely into despair.
No.
Things look up.
I mean, I love the fact that, you know, she's really his light and she is basically his reward almost for going through such dark times. It's so sweet. But my favorite moment was adult Sinan, who you know I love. It's the look on his face when he raises his hand up to show the ring when his publicist or whoever she is asks where she is. I melted. I had seen gifs of it before I watched the episode, so I knew it was coming, but it didn't disappoint when I actually watched it.
It was so sweet.
Even adult Sinan and adult Ishik had chemistry.
Yes!
The way when they hugged, he like almost pets her hair like she's so precious to him was a moment for me.
It was a great ending for them, especially with everything that happened. That was one of the moments watching season two where I went, okay, this show does something for me. Everything that they went through, at least it got them to this.
Yes, 100%. If they had had a sad ending, I would have been a little upset. Like, if they had had the kind of ending that Karem and Ada had, where it's not necessarily bad, there's hope, but it wasn't anything conclusive or concrete. I really needed that closure for Sinan. Like, I needed my baby boy to be happy.
With Karem and Ada too, that was something where their breakup felt more contrived than it needed to be. I understood that they needed time to work on themselves, but 20 years apart felt like a stretch only to serve the we haven't seen each other in 20 years plot that they set up in season one.
Especially considering neither of them ever connected with anyone else like they connected with each other. Like, you really waited 20 years?
Yeah, that whole thing, I was like, I guess. I wish that they'd run off and gotten married. So I think that was also why it was so surprising when Sinan and Ishik are the ones who get married and build a quiet life together. And I didn't think about it, but that's what they really did need.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it still makes me so happy.
also the way Osman's character ended up, Osman and Elif, they don't last. And honestly, that makes sense to me. They were only together for a very short period of time before she moves away.
Long distance is hard.
Especially in the 90s. So
yes,
that made sense to me. So having that open ending made way more sense for the two of them than it did for Kerem and Edda, having not seen each other for a long time. He gets his boat. He hustles. He gets a good life. I don't even know if we even know what his job actually ends up being.
Farmer.
I'm gonna guess no, hard no, but that's funny.
Most high school romances don't last. So I think the fact that you've got Sinan and Ishik that lasted and they got married, and then you've got the hope of something rekindling between Edda and Rem, I don't think it's realistic that you've also got a relationship with Osman and Elif that does last. But that said, since Elif is my least favorite character, I could care less.
And then the show ends. And for as odd as the writing was, having them all together reminiscing, I thought was a really good ending for a weird beginning and middle. I quite enjoyed how they tied it up that way.
Agreed. My only issue were the bad wigs.
Okay, we have to talk about this because, yeah, they're like, oh, remember our teachers who we love so much, and they show us Birju and Kamal. Netflix has money. Why did they spend none of it on aging the two of them? It looked so weird and so bad.
Too much on the soundtrack budget, apparently. It looks really bad. They couldn't have given Khan a few weeks to like grow out something on his face. Like, they had to stick this terrible goatee on him. Poor Pinar had that awful wig.
It was comical in a moment that was supposed to feel serious.
Yeah.
I have to rant briefly about this because the ending with Birju and Kamal, like the first time I watched it, I assumed that Kamal got to be the principal and Birju was like his vice principal. On the second rewatch... Yeah, but it also makes no sense. She's an educator. She's worked so hard to have this job and this position because education is her passion. Kamal.
He's a basketball coach that doesn't like 17-year-olds.
Exactly. And even though he was vice principal for a little bit, trying to find some part of his job that he could be serious about, the way it ended made it feel like either they were co-principals or he was the principal and she was his vice, which felt like a disservice to Birju. And I don't know why they had to do it this way.
It does. I just assumed it was ambiguous. Like, I, again, didn't think too harshly about it. But she's in a chair that looks like official principal's chair. So I kind of thought it was almost a cheeky nod to the fact that she is maybe the principal. We don't know what he is. Maybe the vice principal. Maybe they're co-principals.
I just don't get why he was there.
It doesn't need to be ambiguous. I think they were trying to get a scene with both of them, but they definitely could have done it differently. It is definitely weird. I will give you that 100%. I hope you're not going to lose sleep over this tonight, but knowing you as I do, I think you probably will.
No, I won't, because now it's gone. I've said my piece and I can think about other things.
Okay. Just focus on the bonds of friendship and how that was just such a lovely theme throughout the show and how it really, for me anyways, elevated the show into something a little bit beyond a teen drama, into just a really nice show to watch.
Yeah, by the end of season two, the friendships are what are gonna stick with me, and I am gonna think back fondly on these characters. So it's a nice bonus for a show I was not psyched about.
That you hate watched a little bit?
Yeah. I did hate watch it, did not care about it, and yet here we are. I do want to ask you one quick question before we wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, it's the five adults sitting around the table together at last, and that's great. And then they want Osman to call Elif because that door is still open narratively. And then it does this interesting cut where the scene is the same, but it's all of the teen actors in place of the adults at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And the same scene is happening. They're gonna call Elif. Now, I don't know if it was overly ambiguous or if it was a hint at something, because when I finished watching the show, an interpretation I had was that this future adult plotline still hadn't happened yet. It was as if the show was saying, this is what could happen, that they won't see each other for 20 years.
Oh, interesting. No, I didn't take that from that.
The ending wasn't clear enough for me to feel like it was one way or the other, but I'd almost rather believe that. Like, you have such a strong bond. If you don't stick together, you'll lose the most important people in your life. And that interpretation made me like the ending better than we didn't see each other for somewhat contrived reasons because Sinan and Ishik did invite you to their wedding. And the falling out between them wasn't as catastrophic as not seeing each other for 20 years, in my opinion.
Well, I think they made a pact to stop talking because right. they felt that they were bringing out the worst in each other. This is what happens when you watch an entire season, Maya, in 7 minutes.
And it's the only way I can catch up.
That was overly harsh. I didn't mean it that way.
I guess I did forget about that a little bit, but it still plays into the writing choice that I dislike, where the choice is so much of a cop-out.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
It's so black and white, like, we'll never see each other again, instead of just waiting, or, like, going to college separately. So, I guess that interpretation of the ending showing that where the adults are is still to come, and is an option.
I have a totally different interpretation of that ending than you do, which is interesting to hear. I interpreted it when it showed the teenagers again, that despite the time that had passed, they're still these kids. They're still the same people. Their bonds of friendship, despite the fact that it's been 20 years, hasn't changed anything.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And I will accept that.
I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer. It's very fascinating to me that you interpreted it the way you did. And I think that that's valid as well.
Part of me feels like Netflix had a vision for what the ending should be and didn't execute it very well, which is why there are different interpretations. But maybe it was supposed to be this open-ended.
Well, this is an interesting concept. So let's dig into this a little bit really quick before we wrap up. It's a Netflix show, but it's also a Turkish Dizzy. And I wonder how much control Netflix had. Because in Turkey, you've got rules and regulations and there's censor issues. And I know it's a slightly sexier show. They were able to show alcohol without blurring it. But I still think they had to abide by some Turkish standards, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, for the writing, part of me is curious to know how much control Netflix executives had in the shaping of this story and how they were able to navigate the different cultures between more Western TV and Turkish, which has, as we know, a very unique and specific entertainment industry. One of the biggest things I want to talk about is the controversy that surrounded the character of Osman. If you watch this on Netflix and aren't looking into the show at all, you'll probably miss all of this. But the character of Osman made some big waves in Turkey right before the release of this show. There's still some conflicting information, but essentially what happened was there was some debate over whether Osman was meant to be a gay character. And unfortunately, there were some people who did not want that to happen. Before the show came out, there was a big controversy about canceling the show altogether.
Wow, that's dramatic.
There's still prevailing conservative ideology in Turkey about gay people and gay characters in general. Like, you watch a Dizzy and you can see the implications, but nothing concrete ever makes it to screen. And I'm not sure exactly how this came about, if it was some higher up read a script and decided that there was too much of a gray area for comfort. I don't know if they'd already shot anything yet.
Yeah.
But it did get taken to court.
Wow.
Where it was debated if this could be considered indecent material. Okay, I'm gonna say allegedly because I couldn't re-find the article today. But to my knowledge, it did go to court with the opposition arguing that it was indecent material to put out there, especially in a show for young people. To what I remember reading, the judge eventually ruled that because Netflix is a subscription platform that you have to opt to have access to, anyone who has a subscription has the right to make that decision for themselves.
That's very interesting because I didn't realize that it got taken to court. I thought maybe they might have some influence over it and make some suggestions because this did not air on any Turkish channel that I know of.
No, it's original to Netflix.
I thought I remembered reading that. I don't know whether it was the head of the Turkish censorship authority or someone in government. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it spurred anti-Netflix platform momentum. No?
Yes, you're right. And the government was deeply involved. The president of Turkey had thoughts about this and was not looking fondly on Netflix being available or active in Turkey. And the thing is, all of this goes on, and then season one comes out, and it really does not feel like that's where they're going with Osman. He's just a single guy who doesn't have a love interest and is more concerned with the hustle and being a businessman. And I don't know, to me, sometimes it's okay to just have a single character. It didn't feel like he was craving romantic love. He already found his group of friends and his found family.
I do agree. I don't think it felt like anything was missing because he was single in the first season, and he didn't seem bothered by it either. He had his army of nerds and he had his business ventures, and he seemed actually the least damaged and the most well-adjusted character, arguably, on the show, which furthers my dislike of Elif because she just feels unnecessary.
Well, that's the other thing with Elif, where I'm not sure how deep the reasoning of adding her on the show was, but it really feels like Netflix and the writers are trying to salvage any residual tension by saying, look, he's straight, he has a girlfriend, they're in love. And that, more than anything, felt odd to me. Like, I didn't mind him having a relationship. For me, it wasn't about who he was with, it was if he was with someone at all. But it's just such a nuanced topic to talk about, especially the two of us coming from the US and the way censorship exists or doesn't exist the way it does in Turkey.
It feels very foreign.
Yeah, and I don't think at this time we're the right people to...
No, yeah.
It's not for us to say how antiquated this is, but I wish it didn't have to be this way. I wish everyone could be represented openly, especially in a form of media that has brought comfort and joy to so many people. And I hope that Turkey can get to a place where they're more accepting at some point soon. But it is a topic that's really interesting to think about, not only in the context of this show, but in Turkish TV in general, and how the stories are different and how people are portrayed.
It's very interesting. I liked that. Thank you for explaining that. Moving on, should we get into just a couple of final thoughts that we have?
Yeah. To wrap up talking about Aşk 101 or Love 101, whichever you'd like to call it, at its heart, it really is a teen Netflix drama that at the same time did a decent job of keeping a Turkish identity, even though it's the kind of story you could see coming from any number of cultures.
And I think it really works. And also, let's not forget the most important aspect, that it's the start of Pinkan.
It really is. It brought Pinar and Khan together, and at the time, Netflix didn't realize what an important decision they had made.
They did not realize it.
For Dizzyland and just...
But Sema did, and Sema capitalized on that.
Sema watched Aşk 101 and said, we need more of that. Slow burn, prosecutor, lawyer, AU, let's
go. And we need it now, yes.
In Sema, we trust.
In Sema,
thank
we
you
trust.
For that. So I'm not going to say it's Netflix did it, but they definitely helped. So, and something that I noticed when I was rewatching season two, when Burcu is still unsure if Kemal has feelings for her and she's received these flowers at her door, and Kemal is a bit frustrated with her, saying, we're two adults in a relationship. And me watching that now, having watched 18 episodes of Yarga, this felt like foreshadowing two adults in a relationship.
Aww.
It struck me, and it made me so excited to rewatch Yarga again and again, but also see where it continues to go.
That's nice. Again, I don't think as critically as Maya. So for me, you know, it's just a nice, easy watch. I really liked it. I thought it was one of the more enjoyable shows on Netflix. But again, I tend to gravitate towards romantic shows, which this certainly fit the bill. So all in all, I highly recommend it. If you haven't watched Aşk 101, at the very least, A, thank you for still listening to this, and B, we hope we've intrigued you enough to check it out on Netflix. Highly recommend.
It's one of the more accessible shows to get to, and it is nice. It has a little bit of something for everyone. As much as I believe there were other ways they could have gone about it, it's still a fun time, especially on the second watch, where my expectations were managed a bit.
And if we have convinced you to watch it, feel free to reach out to us and tell us about it. Tell us what you think. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
If you want to get in touch, your thoughts, suggestions, corrections, or any other messages can be emailed to dizzybreakdownpod@gmail.com.
The show's Instagram and Twitter handles are both at Dizzy Breakdown. For our personal Twitters, you can find me at Caro Gables.
And you can find me at The Scorpio Racer. And if you like, you can rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify and help new listeners find us. But until next time.
Until next time, everyone.
Thanks for listening.